Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Mazerface, Talk Sports Chief Football Correspondent Alex Crook, and today the former Arsenal winger Adrian Clark. Here's what's coming up on the show.
Maybe certain players are suited to certain clubs, and listen, it is a Champions League semi-final, but playing in Europe is very different to playing in the Premier League week in, week out, and I think maybe he's just not suited to Premier League football, but you can't argue he was outstanding on Wednesday night.
Only five Premier League sides have conceded more set-piece goals than Tottenham. And it's one of those fine margin areas where you need to be good. You need to be at the top of the charts, not near the bottom.
If you look at the league table since those first nine games of the season, only the top four have taken more points than the Cherry. So I think this is a potential banana skin for Arsenal.
I think Arsenal are capable of winning their last three. It's just that City are absolutely capable of winning their last four, unfortunately.
Was there any point in firing the manager and bringing back Chris Wilder? Has that made one jot of difference? I'd argue no. I think good riddance to them, to be honest. I think they've been a stain on the Premier League this season.
Gentlemen, very good morning, evening, afternoon, wherever you are in the world. To you, Adrian, lovely to see you. I noticed that you've timed your run to perfection. Just as Arsenal are about to grab glory in the Premier League, you show up on Premier League All Access. Brilliant, brilliant timing as always.
Thank you for the invite. Yeah, look, most of the stuff I've done with TalkSport down the years is Arsenal related has been when they've been doing badly. So I'm going to make the most of these glory days. Let's see what happens, eh?
Yes, indeed. Alex Crook is here. A busy week for him. I think I've seen him play golf a couple of times. He's also been in the gym for the first time in 4 years. How are you feeling? You've got a new fitness regime. You've been getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to special classes, haven't you?
Do you know what? I'm aching all over at this moment in time, which is probably more of a reflection of my fitness than the classes. But no, I've not been on the golf course because it has been quite a busy news week, actually. Lots of deals already in the offing for what I think is going to be a busy summer. Keep an eye for that last couple of weeks in June before the end of the PSR period, because I think we could see some movement in the transfer market.
People desperately trying to sell their assets at a cut price in order to limbo under the line of PSR. Brilliant planning. Excellent examples of how to run businesses superbly.
Football romance at its
football.
Best, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about football romance in the week, good games in the Champions League, I thought, especially Tuesday night, Bayern Munich against Real Madrid. A very good game. Where Real Madrid actually weren't the dominant force in the game, but somehow got away with a draw. And they did that because they came up with moments, Adrian.
They did, yeah. Look, Vinicius Junior is a class act, isn't he? And I mean, the through ball from Toni Kroos for that Vinicius goal was brilliant, sensational. And that's what they've got in their armoury, Real Madrid. That's why they're considered favourites for the Champions League. But I was quite impressed with Bayern Munich. I think they probably played a bit better than they did against Arsenal. And Leroy Sané, who's been out since that game against Arsenal, I thought he was absolutely superb. So, Bayern are in with a chance here.
Yeah, what a goal he scored as well. I mean, he hit that so hard. It looked like he was using Thor's hammer. And similarly, on Wednesday night, Niklas Füllkrug hitting the ball from the edge of the penalty area with the requisite amount of venom to beat Donnarumma at his near post. But I think the headline really from the Borussia Dortmund-Paris Saint-Germain game was the performance of Jadon Sancho, Crook's favourite Manchester United export. You've been calling him all sorts of names over the course of the last few years, but you have to stand up and say, well played, fella.
Yeah, I'll also stand up and say we never saw that type of dynamic performance in a Manchester United shirt. Maybe certain players are suited to certain clubs. And listen, it is a Champions League semi-final, but playing in Europe is very different to playing in the Premier League week in, week out. And I think maybe he's just not suited to Premier League football, but you can't argue he was outstanding on Wednesday night. No question about that. Probably the type of display that Erik ten Hag could have done without at this moment in time.
Yes, we will talk Manchester United in a little bit more detail towards the end of the podcast. Actually, we're going to do a little bit of a section on the restructuring behind the scenes and how they plan to reshape their squad in the summer. That's coming up a little bit later on, so stick with us for that. First of all, let's get stuck into the Premier League action this weekend. It gets underway on Thursday night. Stamford Bridge.
They don't like each other much. They never have.
Ange Postecoglou may be Spurs Superman, but Chelsea are always their kryptonite.
We want to win, and Tottenham for sure is going to come here to try to win also, and it's going to be for sure a good win.
He's now gone to PSG and not won anything, apart from the league that they win every year. He got binned out of the Champions League every time. And he's gone to Chelsea and he just looks garbage.
Usually no love lost between Tottenham and Chelsea.
I never wanted Pochettino. I never wanted him. He's far too Tottenham. He is the personification of that Tottenham team.
Maurizio Pochettino, the man that led them into this stadium, is the first man this season to beat them in it. Tottenham 1, Chelsea 4.
You're playing away from home, you know, at their ground. It's a derby, London derby again, so you kind of know it's going to be a tough game.
This is the Premier League and nothing is over until it's over.
Tottenham hoping to get their top four bid back on track against Chelsea. Jekyll and Hyde Chelsea. You never know what you're going to get. Absolutely outstanding or totally abysmal. What Chelsea are going to show up this week? Adrian?
I don't know. No one knows, do they? But on their day, as they showed for parts of that Villa game, they can look a top side, or at least a very dangerous team. I still think at the back, if you can get this Chelsea defence, then they're absolutely vulnerable. I can't get the image out of my head of how they performed at Emirates just a week or two ago. It was, you know, so poor. So I think Tottenham have got a chance here.
9 days, 14 hours and 27 minutes since the end of that game. It left a scar.
It did. I'm sure it did. But look, if Spurs can get out that Chelsea rear guard, then they've got a chance to break their hoodoo. What is it? One win in 33, I think, against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Quite remarkable, really. But I wasn't hugely impressed by Tottenham in the North London derby either. They had a lot of the ball, but really didn't open up Arsenal at all. They were gifted the two goals, and it was only really set pieces where they carried that threat. So, yeah, two very sort of patchy teams with lots of talent, but they're not exactly convincing at the moment. It's a hard one to call this.
And an interesting discussion last night about Ange Postecoglou's stubbornness. He refuses to accept that set pieces are an issue for his side in a defensive sense.
I think I've answered this question and I don't think it satisfies people, but no, I don't see it as an issue. It's something we work on along with everything else in our game. There are far more important things we need to concentrate on at the moment in terms of the team we're building. But I think people want to believe that football is, and it can be, very prescriptive. You know, you got an illness, here's the tablet and you feel better. But I've never believed that. You know, I've always been about trying to create an environment, style of football and a squad that can win things. And I've never done it through a prescriptive manner and I certainly won't be doing it now.
Well, they are a problem, whether he likes to admit it or not. Vicario getting targeted by opposition defenders, attackers at will is causing them an issue. They've conceded 9 times in the last 16 games from corners alone, Adrian. They are vulnerable. It is a problem. And if you keep conceding goals in those numbers, then it is going to affect your results.
Yeah, and it's your responsibility as a head coach to do something about it, isn't it? Those numbers are damning. Only 5 Premier League sides have conceded more set-piece goals than Tottenham. And it's one of those fine margin areas where you need to be good. You need to be at the top of the charts, not near the bottom, if you want to be successful. I think Vicario is a brilliant shot stopper, but there's clearly a lack of presence there inside his own 6-yard box, and teams are definitely targeting them. I thought the zone of marking setup was they were just a bunch of statues really against Arsenal. The two man-to-man markers, all Arsenal did for that Havertz goal was do a crossover. That's all they did. And it meant that Kulusevski ran into his own player and Kai Havertz was free to score. So, yeah, they've got a lot to work on, I think, in that department, Spurs.
Other areas where they have an issue, obviously, is the idea of this insistence of just focusing on one set of tactics, which is play the high line and hope that Mickey van der Ven's hamstring don't ping as the ball goes over the top. That is obviously clearly a tactic by design from Postecoglou. But going forward, James Maddison's had limited influence since coming back from injury. What can you put that down to, Crook?
Well, I don't think he's looked fully fit since he's come back from injury. I think he's a confidence player as well. And I think the worse his performances have got, the lower his confidence has. So that's a job for Postecoglou. I think quite often they bypass him as well. Actually, they go out wide, or as you say, they try and play it over the top and use Son's pace. The other problem that needs addressing, I think, as far as Tottenham are concerned, is the number of injuries. And again, our Scottish correspondent David Tanner tells me this was also an issue when Postecoglou was in charge at Celtic, the number of players who succumbed to muscular problems. We've got Timo Werner out for the rest of the season because of a hamstring issue. Ben Davis won't play again this season as well. Now, is that a medical problem for Spurs, or is that because of the intensity and the way that Postecoglou plays and the demands that he puts on his players?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because this season, like none other, has seen a record number of injuries. We've also seen a record number of goals. We've also played a record number of minutes. And every game seems to be being played like a roller coaster experience. I mean, it is. I wonder whether the league as a whole has just started to engage in this type of football that, yeah, keeps you on the edge of the seat. It's brilliant for us neutrals and entertained, but very difficult for players to sustain over a long period of time, Adrian.
Yeah, it's a good point. That's not a point I'd really thought of that much. I think the extra minutes make a difference. Yeah, the attacking end-to-end nature is going to increase the sort of high-intensity sprints. I just do it from my experience. It's going back to the old days here where I was young enough to be able to play and lucky enough to play a few games in the Premier League. And the big difference between the Premier League and the EFL was the ball was in play so much more. In the EFL, stop, start, free kick, corner, throw-ins. It's not the same in the Premier League. It's just bang, everyone, you know, straight in there, restart, and it's relentless. And the amount of fitness that you need, or the extra fitness you need to play in the Premier League, even then, was a big, big jump. And that has increased, you know, so much in recent years. So look, these players, you know, they've got the same bodies as me and you. You know, they're going to break down at some point. Are we pushing them a little bit too hard? What I'll say about Spurs is that they've not exactly been overloaded with matches this season compared to some other clubs. Exactly. So look, if Postecoglou's team are in the Champions League or the Europa League, imagine how many injuries they might have then.
What's interesting is something that we've mentioned on Game Day Live this year already, talking about the fact that they are going to have an increased workload next season. And just for clarity, I don't think there is a single Premier League player who has a body anything like me, Crook, or even Adrian. I might be doing you a disservice, Adrian, but I'm certainly not doing me or Crook one. As for Chelsea, I mean, listen, it can't be that bad in the Premier League because Thiago Silva is only just leaving Chelsea and he's only 49 now. His contract has come to an end at the end of the year and he's going to move on to Pastures News, probably Fluminense down in Brazil. Good luck to him. What about Conor Gallagher? Everyone's talking about him and not having a new contract and he hasn't been offered one yet, Crook. Are Chelsea going to do another PR faux pas?
Well, it certainly smacks of the Mason Mount situation. As you say, we broke this story exclusively on TalkSport.com this week, that here we are coming towards the end of one season. His contract expires at the end of the next and he's still not been presented with a new deal by Chelsea. I think there have been loose conversations and I think he wants to be one of the club's top earners. And you could argue that he deserves that because he plays week in, week out. He's captained the team more often than not. But it's a very strange situation when you've got a player, the manager, clearly puts a lot of faith in that at the moment, the boardroom aren't showing the same faith. And I know it's been a topic of conversation amongst the Chelsea players as well.
Very odd. Okay, let's get stuck into the title race now. League leaders Arsenal up first, live on Talk Sports, Saturday lunchtime, 12:30, with a keen intent to extend their advantage. Been pretty impressed by Arsenal and the way they've responded to going out of the Champions League. I spoke to Mikel Arteta and he said that famous line, when a competition questions your ego, you have to go out on the pitch and respond and show people who you are. And they've certainly done that since then. They've beaten Wolves and then dismantled Spurs in the derby. One of the key facets to that has been a change in midfield and the way they've used Thomas Partey, Adrian.
Yeah, he's come back in. Look, they've missed him the entire season, really. And he's a big miss because if you've got a fit and firing Thomas Partey, he's one of the best players in his position in the division because he's got this presence. He's a brilliant progressive passer. He's also not as quick as he used to be. I've got to say, that's a slight issue for him moving forwards. But he's a little bit quicker across the turf than Jorginho still. So yeah, I'm not surprised that Partey has come back in for the business end of the campaign. And you look at it with Rice and Partey and Ødegaard, that is a very, very strong central midfield. Moving forward, I suspect Mikel Arteta might look to upgrade Thomas Partey because of the injury record. I don't know if you can rely on him, but in the here and now, he's a hugely influential player. And hopefully he can stay fit for the final three games.
Lots of people talking about the possibility of Gabriel Jesus moving on this week. Arsenal, will they entertain bids for him in the summer? Has Havertz re-emergence... I say re-emergence, he never really settled when he was at Chelsea. And there was a number of reasons for that. Obviously, towards the back end of it, you had the upset with who was in charge, manager changed, his position constantly changed. At the beginning, he turned up at a team in the middle of lockdown. I know from speaking to him that he said that they found that particularly difficult. This is a guy who loves to wander the streets, go for coffees, hang out in sort of like cool urban areas. I remember once I was in Cologne, we was playing at Leverkusen and he was just sort of wandering around the street on his own, just sort of hanging out, going to have a coffee here, there and everywhere. This is the kind of guy, he's a community guy, wants to get involved. Couldn't do that during lockdown. I think that certainly affected his confidence in the first year or so that he was at Chelsea. But he's certainly done a terrific job. And I was studying this week for the European Championships, and I think that he will end up being the man who leads the line for Germany going into the home Euros. Because of his performances, does that mean that Jesus is now not surplus to requirements, but available for transfer if a decent offer comes in?
Yeah, I think there's a certain respect element from Mikel Arteta on this one, because obviously the reason that Gabriel Jesus swapped City for Arsenal was because he was always a backup at City. He wanted to be playing week in, week out. That isn't happening now. He isn't getting any younger. So I think, yeah, if a deal was presented that suited both parties, then Arsenal would entertain it. I do think they'll bring in a new number nine in the summer, despite how well Havertz is playing. And I picked him out for special praise after that North London derby. I think Nketiah will go. It was a bizarre decision to chuck as much money at him as they did, because I never really saw him as an Arsenal player if they wanted to be challenging for the Premier League and the Champions League. So again, I think it could be quite a busy summer. What do they do with Emile Smith-Rowe, who hasn't got the minutes under his belt that he would have wanted, and he's at the age now where surely he's going to want to go and play regular football? I think Thomas Partey, despite what Adrian's just been saying, could well be another potential departure if the Saudi Pro League come calling. So again, I think they're going to try and regenerate, particularly if they do end up missing out on the title, because again, maybe they'll feel they need a little bit more quality to get past this City juggernaut.
Yeah, yeah. Very difficult to get past the City juggernaut, no matter how much quality you've got, Adrian.
Yeah, of course. I'd be reluctant to sell Gabriel Jesus. I think, I get it, if the player isn't happy, fair enough, maybe you need to respect them and move them on. But yeah, I think if you're losing Eddie Nketiah, and I don't think there's any argument that is the first transfer that they should probably look to make in the summer, then, Jesus is a very good impact player. He comes off the bench, he can change things. He's a good rotational choice other than a target man centre forward. He can play on the left, he can play on the right. I love the chaos that he brings, and he's had some great moments this season, just not enough of them. Mm. And obviously, it's the conversion rate that's the issue. I think his conversion rate's just over 10%, which is actually the worst of all the Arsenal players that have scored a goal this season. So that's not ideal for your leading striker, is it? So I think he's got a part to play, but maybe not as first choice.
If Ben White's got a higher conversion rate than you, then you are in trouble, aren't you, as a leading striker? No disrespect to Ben White. They've won 7 of their last 8 meetings with Bournemouth, drawing the other Arsenal, and they can only really take care of their own business. But if they were in a situation when it comes to not winning the title this year, I don't think anyone can sort of complain about the effort they've put in and the assault that they've mounted upon the title. And Bournemouth aren't the easiest of customers, especially recently. I mean, Crook, you've been putting together a package about this, haven't you, for Game Day Live on Saturday?
Yeah, and it was interesting. I spoke to one of your colleagues covering La Liga, Terry Gibson, and he was suggesting that the reason Iriola had such a good record against the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid and the other big teams in Spain was because, unlike a lot of the minnows, and he was in charge of a smaller club, they would go and play on the front foot, they would press high, and they would really take the game to their opponents. And I know it was something that Bournemouth noted when they were doing their diligence. We haven't necessarily seen that this season because they played a lot of the big sides in the first 9 games when they didn't win. They've taken 4 points off Manchester United, but that's not particularly difficult at this moment in time. But I do think we're going to see a much better Bournemouth performance than in the home game because I think the players clearly now have adapted to Iriola's style. And if you look at the league table since those first 9 games of the season, only the top 4 have taken more points than the Cherries. So I think this is a potential banana skin for Arsenal, particularly when you look at Dominic Solanke banging in goals and maybe trying to put himself in the shop window. I really like Lewis Cook in midfield. I think he has got back to the type of form that earned him an England call-up. And I think he's a little bit unlucky that he's been overlooked completely in the conversation for the European Championship squad. Defensively, they're improving, I think. I really like Milos Kerkez as well, another smart piece of recruitment. And I think they'll go there, they'll be brave, and Arsenal might have to work hard for it.
Right, okay. So, Crookie predicting an upset. Adrian, are you shaking in your boots, or do you think that Arsenal get the job done here?
I think they'll get the job done, but I do think it's an awkward game. No team's had more shots from fast breaks than Bournemouth by a long way, but incidentally, I think they've had 9 more than anyone else.
But most of those were in the Luton game.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah. Clivert's in good form. He's worth a mention. I like that he's pretty quick across the turf, isn't he? I think he's someone that could cause problems, but I would anticipate Arsenal getting the job done, but it's an awkward one. I think Arsenal are capable of winning their last 3. It's just that City are absolutely capable of winning their last 4, unfortunately.
Yes, because they're in full robot mode at this moment in time. And naughty Wolves had the temerity to beat Manchester City earlier in the season. But are they going to be able to lay a glove on them at the Etihad Stadium? I mean, out of their remaining games, I mean, what is the most likely banana skin here? Wolves at home, Fulham away, Tottenham away, West Ham at home. I mean, they are all fixtures that you'd be very surprised, Crook, if Manchester City didn't win every single one.
Yeah, I think a lot of Arsenal fans are clinging on to their record away from home against Tottenham. Obviously, yet to score there in the Premier League. They did beat them in the FA Cup at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium earlier this season. So you could say that hoodoo has been lifted. But I've said for a while now, whatever Arsenal do, I think City will just keep on winning. And obviously, they made a little bit of hard work of it against Forest at the weekend, but they still got the job done. You'd expect Erling Haaland, having come off the bench and scored, to start this weekend. Again, much like Bournemouth, I think Wolves are a team who've punched above their weight over the course of the season, but away from home, I don't see any issues for City. I really don't.
Wolves have won just 1 of their last 8 matches in all competitions, and that was against Luton on Saturday. I mean, if Arsenal fans are hoping that Spurs take the points off Manchester City, I mean, it's very difficult to convince themselves of that, having seen what they saw in the opening 38 minutes and the North London derby, I think. But you never know. They can cross their fingers. Something might change. Something might happen. We're going to be at that Fulham game away from home next Saturday. Not this Saturday, next Saturday, live on TalkSport. And we will go with Manchester City to Tottenham as well to see how things pan out. You never know, Arsenal fans. You never know. That's the battle at the top. Let's look at the relegation scrap at the bottom now. Starting with a big clash on Friday night.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Well, this could have been absolutely huge, couldn't it? Luton Everton live on TalkSport, 8 o'clock. It's not as big now because Everton are safe, but Luton certainly aren't. We will get to them very shortly, but more uncertainty this week. And I think whilst you were away doing the Masters, I found out about this story about the money situation at Everton where seven partners were trying desperately to extend their terms of reference with Andy Bell, the agent of Bellman, who had loaned them so much money, 158 million quid. They had to pay it back by midnight one night, the night they played Chelsea. They got an extension. They've been loaned more money this week, 16 million quid to cover their wages. I mean, this is a real problem. I mentioned at the time that I thought there was a chance, an outside chance they might go into administration. The more and more I look into it, the more convinced I am that unless 7-7 partners manage to complete their takeover in double quick time, they will go into administration, won't they?
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility and a real fear for Evertonians. The club seem quite confident it won't happen this side of the end of the season because obviously the automatic penalty for going into administration as Portsmouth, the only club to do it in the Premier League, found out in 2010 is 9 points, which have put Everton right back in relegation danger. But I think they're going to limp on until the end of the season. But if this takeover doesn't go through soon after that, then I think it's an inevitable outcome. And you and I have always had concerns, Sam, we've voiced them on this podcast, about 777 and their ability to pass the Premier League's owners and directors tests. And the Premier League have been trying to ratify this deal for some time, and the longer it drags on, the more I think they're likely to fail that owners and directors test. And I'd like to hear from Farhad Moshiri what the plan B is, because obviously they're committed to building this new stadium, which looks fantastic, that they've been besieged by financial problems. I think Sean Dyche has done a brilliant job to keep those to one side and manage to pick up wins. But I think the future's still looking pretty bleak for Everton at this moment in time, and inevitably they're going to have to sell players like Jarrod Branthwaite and maybe Jordan Pickford as well.
Yeah, they tell me that there are people in the background that would like to take over Everton but may well end up waiting until it goes into administration, because if it goes into administration, they don't have to pay all the bills. And that's the key thing, isn't it? They don't have to pay as much money out. So, you know, for a new ownership perspective, it's actually quite good for them if they go into administration, if they believe they can make up the 9 points and still stay in the Premier League next year. They could end up doing sort of a different arrangement where they go into a pre-pack where they decide to give a prospective owner the opportunity to buy the club after they've negotiated downwards the money that they owe everybody else. So, you know, they've got a big creditor that they owe 150 million to. Say, look, we can't give you that. No one's going to give you that. We're going to go into administration. You'll get nothing. We will give you 50 million, but we can't give you 158. And it's whether or not they can do enough of those deals to reduce the burden and then force through a deal. But you say that they've been scrutinizing this 777 partners deal for a while. It's not a while, it's for ages. It's been since September when they were identified as potential new owners of the club. And the owners and directors test has been going on forever. So I don't think there's much confidence in the Premier League in this group. And bearing in mind that I think I sent you an article this week about their airline going completely bust. I think one of the airplanes was on the runway and then everyone had to get off because it had gone into administration or something like that. It was quite an embarrassing situation. But that is certainly a situation that is not looking good for Everton. You mentioned Pickford could go. Chelsea eyeing him up. That'd be interesting. That's not the first time they've looked at him. Branthwaite looks like he's being heavily linked to Manchester United. That seems to be something that would suit both parties. Let's talk a little bit about Luton now. Plucky old Luton being given ample opportunities to move clear of the bottom three, Adrian, somehow still in with a chance of staying up. And they keep turning down those opportunities. I mean, how is it? I mean, this is how bad Nottingham Forest must be, that Luton have been on 25 points for about 3 months.
I know. Yeah, they can't believe their luck, really, that they're still in it, I'd imagine, Luton, because they've been in poor form. That defeat against Brentford really should have been the sort of death now. That was it. They were gone after that, but they're still hanging in there. And look, if they win this match, they give themselves a chance, don't they? And they could absolutely win this match. Everton's away record is pretty dismal. I think 6 defeats and 3 draws since their last away win. Their last away performance was at Chelsea. It'd be interesting if Chelsea did go for Pickford. Last time he was at Stamford Bridge, he didn't cover himself in glory, did he? With one of those goals. Luton have got a chance. They've had too many injuries to defenders and their first choice defence wasn't brilliant anyway. So the backup guys were always going to struggle. The good news for Luton ahead of this game is Adebayo is back fit and available. And I think that Adebayo and Carlton Morris can be a handful. So, yeah, I give them a shot here of causing, well, it wouldn't be an upset, but of getting a big, big win.
Yeah, Everton have won 4 of their last 5 league matches without conceding. They've come into form at just the right time. You wouldn't expect them to have the extra fire in their belly. Maybe you need sometimes because of the fact that they are already safe. And if you look at the Luton record, it's quite poor recently. 1 win in last 15 all competitions. But if you're a Luton fan, grab onto this. You have played Everton twice already this season and you've won both. Already this season, maybe a third time will drag you out of the bottom three. You never know. Sheffield United against Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest, how will they be feeling this week after the audio of their famous incidents was made public, Crook?
Well, I don't think it'll cheer them up any, but it's interesting they only really focused on that one penalty appeal. And we said at the time, actually, the first two were more debatable than Forrest's ridiculous statement suggested, but the third one looked a penalty to us, and I think Howard Webb obviously has confirmed that. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Forrest in terms of any punishment for that very strongly worded statement, shall we say. And we're still waiting as we record this to hear the outcome of their appeal against their points penalty. It was suggested to me earlier this week that they were confident they might get a couple of points back, and obviously that would change the whole complexion down at the bottom of the table once again, but we're still waiting to get confirmation of that.
Yeah, it's too late. It's not fair on anyone that we're waiting until this late in the season. We're in May now. It should all be sorted by now. There's fewer games left for people to influence. You know, at this moment in time, Luton feel as if they've got an opportunity to stay in the league. If Nottingham Forest were to get those 2 points back, or even 3 points back, or even 1 point back, it would change the complexion of what's required over the course of the next few games. Luton should have the information before they play on Friday night. It is not fair. It skews the league. Because if Luton need to go hell for leather and win the game to stay in the league, then they need to know that approach so they can form a tactical plan to go into it in that manner. They may not need to do that. They might believe that they can get enough points by drawing the game on Friday night, but that's up to them. They need to be able to make those choices. They can't do that if they don't know what the state of play is in the Premier League. It's not right. Talking of not right, those conversations between the VAR and referees, a bit puzzling once again, weren't they?
Yeah.
Ashley Young's foul on Hudson-Odoi described as a tussle and a mutual engagement. What I don't get is when you know that the referee clearly says, I think he got the ball, and then you know that he doesn't, why don't they just say, oh, no, you've made a mistake there. Go and have a look at it on the monitor. Very, very strange. Nottingham Forest's biggest opportunity, though, came last week. They could have scored two goals against Manchester City. And if they can score two goals against Manchester City, Adrian, they should be able to get, you know, 10 against Sheffield United.
I mean, yeah, they've seen a few goals, haven't they, at Bramall Lane this season, the Blades fans, but not many by their team. It's, yeah, they've taken some pastings. And if they attack with the same gusto and quality that they did against City Forest, then they'll wipe the floor with Sheffield United. I thought that Ola Aina and Hudson-Odoi were particularly good against City. Chris Wood, not so much. Chris Wood, ironically, had the best conversion rate in the Premier League among sort of regular goal scorers up until that game, and where he had lead in his boots, much to my frustration, I've got to say. I'm hearing that Tao Awoniyi is back in training, so they might have another option up front for this game, Nottingham Forest. But yeah, you look at the running, that they have to win this game, Forest. They can't drop points here, and that would be criminal, really.
Yeah, he was watching the game, wasn't he, from on high on Sunday afternoon from the stands, Tao Awoniyi. And he's done a terrific job there, a terrific finisher. He played with Liverpool for a while in their academy, went off to Germany, did well in Germany, was brought back to the Premier League with Nottingham Forest. Took a while to get settled, but end of last season, terrific. Beginning of this season, even better. And you do hope for Nottingham Forest's sake that he will be able to play for them in the Premier League again, although Luton fans surely won't be feeling like that. But Sheffield United could be our first Centurions. Only three goals required for Nottingham Forest this weekend, and they would have conceded 100 goals in the Premier League. One team has done that before, but that was over 42 games. So this is going to be quite some achievement for Sheffield United, isn't it? I mean, do they get a special plaque, an engraved medal? What do they get for being the first team in a 38-game season to concede 100 goals?
That was Swindon, wasn't it? The team who did it before. Yes. And I think I'm right in saying they only had to not concede six on the last day of the season against Tottenham to avoid 100 goals, and they got beat six. Sheffield United are going to do it a little bit earlier, I think. I mean, listen, we called it out. I remember, Sam, we were in for Jim and Simon when Sheffield United sold Ndiaye, having lined up a glamorous social media video involving Billy Sharp announcing that he would sign a new contract. And we said then, they're just not going to be competitive. They're not trying to be competitive in the Premier League. You don't sell your two best players on the eve of the season. And it's come home to roost. You have to question, was there any point in firing the manager and bringing back Chris Wilder? Has that made one jot of difference? I'd argue no. I think good riddance to them, to be honest. I think they've been a stain on the Premier League this season, Sheffield United.
I think that's a little bit harsh. I mean, I would say I think it has made a difference that Chris Wilder has come in. I think they've shown a little bit more fight in certain games, and they've certainly picked up more points than they did do in the first half of the season. But we spoke to Paul Heckingbottom at the time, and when you say I don't think they tried to stay in the Premier League, I don't think that's true of the coaching staff and the players. I just don't think that the coaching staff were given the right tools. I don't think, you know, you had the right people in the right places because the owners have stripped the money out of it. Because obviously the Saudi Arabian owners want to shift it on. They had what they thought was a takeover incoming from a Nigerian billionaire. That didn't materialise. And as a result, they decided to not asset strip, but sell the players that were going to run out of contract. So that was a problem for them. They didn't reinvest the money. See what happens next year. Don't know if it's going to be as fruitful for them, but look, they're a good club, and the fans there probably deserve better than what they got this year. Burnley against Newcastle, another abysmal showing from a promoted team for most of the season. But all of a sudden, Burnley getting up to the line and dipping for maybe a place in the Premier League next season. Is it too little too late that they've managed to put some performances and some results together finally, Adrian?
It's not too late. I mean, they can't believe it's not too late because the others have been floundering ahead of them. But they're definitely the form team out of the three that could drop. So they've got a chance. I think the issue with them was that they just had barely any players with Premier League experience at the start of this season. I think the squad was hugely imbalanced in regards to Premier League rookies, and it's taken them too long to get going. Anyone that saw the game at Manchester United, albeit not the strongest Premier League opposition these days, but you know, they look Premier League quality, a lot of the guys now, whereas that wasn't the case a few months ago. Yeah, some good football, but obviously a lot of possession. They have more of the ball than Manchester United, but home form hasn't been great, has it, at Turf Moor this campaign? No. That's where they've really blown it. Haven't made what they need. What this Burnley team needs is a little bit of a dash of the old Burnley, just a little bit more grisliness, a little bit more set piece prowess, a little bit more aggression. If they had that, they wouldn't be a bad team, but they're a little bit one-dimensional and soft.
They're a little bit lightweight, aren't they? There's not enough physicality and muscularity about them, especially at the back. And they do make elementary mistakes. And, you know, I felt a bit sorry for a goalkeeper, James Trafford, who did well, but he just wasn't strong enough at times. And then you've got Aaron Muric, who comes in, and again, he makes a silly mistake. If you think they didn't make those mistakes, they'd be out of the relegation zone at this moment in time. You mentioned that they have more possession than Manchester United last time out. Actually, I don't know what is more shocking. The fact that Burnley could still stay up in the Premier League, or that Manchester United are sixth in the league. It's quite amazing, really. Newcastle have their sights on finishing sixth. They'd have to do better than Manchester United over the next couple of games. Shouldn't be that difficult, bearing in mind that Manchester United goes to inform Crystal Palace on Monday night and then take on Arsenal at Old Trafford. Crook and I will be there. I'll be there for both. Crook will be there for the second of those instalments. I think Newcastle will end up going and grabbing that sixth place. There you go. There's my prediction. Let's round things off chatting about the most, the most chaotic team in the league. There's quite a few chaotic teams in the league, but I know producer Jeremy is a Leeds fan, so he put that in the running order just to rile Crook. But Crook probably would have written the same thing, so I doubt it does rile him that much. Reports this week saying that all but three of their playing squad are up for sale this summer. So let's delve into it. Ah, yes, they go to Crystal Palace on Monday Night Live on TalkSport. Crystal Palace have won three of their last four matches. Jean-Philippe Mateta is playing like Kylian Mbappe. I do wonder, actually, and I saw this. Actually, Adrian, before we talk Manchester United, let me ask you this question. If Kobbie Mainoo played for Crystal Palace and the boy Wharton, who's gone from Blackburn to Crystal Palace in the January transfer window, was at United instead, who would be further up Gareth Southgate's pecking order?
That's a brilliant question, because I think I'd probably say Wharton, because he has been very impressive. The quality of his passing is terrific. He's really thrived under Glasner, and obviously in a team that, you know, shouldn't really have as much talent around him as Manchester United. What I would also say to counter that is that Kobbie Mainoo is doing really well in a shocking environment, in a squad, a team that really aren't a team. You know, it's just a group of individuals. I'd be reticent to describe Manchester United as a team. They're just a group of individuals. So I think that he deserves credit for being able to shine in that setup. I think they're two really good players, but two players that shouldn't really be anywhere near England first choice starting 11 potential at this stage, really. If there was a bit more depth in that area of the field.
There is a dearth in that area, isn't there? And as a result of that, they are under consideration. I don't know if Wharton is, but certainly Mainoo is. Let's talk a little bit about what Manchester United do next then, because Mainoo, Garnacho and Højlund are all safe from the fire sale. But this is quite a hard job for someone, isn't it? Trying to get value for all of these players that have disappointed. It was interesting reading Jose Mourinho say he can still see six or seven players that are in this squad that he tried to get rid of 5 years ago. You know, this is the recruitment has been poor, but the retention's been just as bad. And nothing's changed. I mean, because they bought in Anthony and Mount, hasn't really worked out for either of them. I think Mount may be a little bit unlucky with injuries and again, environment might be different if Thomas Tuchel is there next year. But, you know, should there be anybody else who's on that list that should be safe from being sold? Lisandro Martinez, Bruno Fernandes?
Yeah, both of those for me. Obviously, Bruno has set the cat amongst the pigeons with some comments that he's made about thinking about his future after the European Championship, but I still think he'd be one that United would like to cling on to. I still think in the right environment with the right players around him, there's a very good footballer there. In fact, at times this season, he's been carrying the fight on his own. Martinez, I guess you question his fitness, but when he is fit, certainly he's a more than capable defender. They're going to have to keep the goalkeeper unless they bring David De Gea back on a free transfer. He was training, Altrincham this week, I think, on his own, just to remind people he's still around. But listen, this story is all well and good, but United have been trying to offload players for years. They tried to offload Harry Maguire and Scott McTominay last summer and couldn't do it. There's talk that they'll be open to offers for Marcus Rashford. No team in the world are going to pay big money and the wages that Marcus Rashford is earning at United. So unfortunately, they're stuck with each other. So he's got to find a way to get his head down and get back to form, and they've got to find a way to get the best of his ability and reintegrate him into the starting 11.
Well, he hasn't, has he? I mean, because he could just take his money for the next 5 years and be a very wealthy individual. Someone has got to find a way to motivate him, to get him focused. Someone has got to inspire him. It's all right saying that they're stuck with each other. That's fine by him. He lives in the area that he grew up in. He's getting paid over £300,000 a week. I'm sure he's okay, thank you very much. But Manchester United need more from him. So they need to find someone or some way to generate more consistent, better performances from a player who is their star asset. Because no one is going to come along and take him off your hands.
No, spot on. And it's all well and good saying that they're going to let X amount of players go. Unless they're out of contract, it's very difficult. They're banking on Saudi Arabia to come and rescue Casemiro and take him off their hands. Christian Eriksen's still under contract, and I love Christian Eriksen. I think that the way that he's bounced back is a genuinely feel-good story, but he clearly hasn't got the legs to get around the pitch anymore, and it's best for all concerned if he moves on as well. But again, he's on decent wages. United have spent too long paying too much money for players who are not at the required level, and it's coming back to haunt them. It's a really difficult job to shift on these players. I saw Anthony Martial sat next to us in the director's box at the Liverpool game recently. I mean, what a waste of money that guy's proved to be.
Sometimes you just got to take a hit, Crookie. Look at Arsenal. They had to make some tough decisions getting high earners off the books. You know, Nicolas Pepe is a great example. A real flop, you know, for the money. Absolutely wasn't worth it. You know, they found a way to move him on. Aubameyang, Lacazette, these guys, they had to go. And I think it's a similar situation. There might have to be a few payouts. What I'll say about people like Rashford is that you get to the top, you get to his level for a reason. And you have to have a certain level of professionalism and positivity in terms of your attitude to make it. And I just think he is one of a few players that have got into just such bad habits. Standards have been allowed to slip so much at Old Trafford over a course of a number of years now that I think, I'm not saying he's a victim of that, but it's easy to get caught up in that. I think a different manager or a different environment and you could still see Marcus Rashford shine at the highest level. Look at Sancho. Look at what he did for Dortmund. You know, if a player is happy and the standards around him are as they should be, they can thrive. So I wouldn't write off any of these players. It's the environment that's the problem.
Adrian makes a good point, actually. You know, Rashford's 26 years of age. He's not the oldest of those group. There's still a lot of football left in him. And if you look at someone like, I mean, he was shown up really by people who watched the Premier League, who were glancing at the Champions League semi-finals and looking at Karim Adeyemi on Wednesday night and the desire he showed to get back, track back and help out his team in a crucial match. So I think, you know, people immediately drew comparisons between the two because of the tracking back, because of the speed that he had on the counter-attack and because of the fact that he was quite happy to deploy that speed when tracking back and helping out Ian Maatsen, the left fullback. But also, I think Adrian's right in that sometimes you have to take a hit, right? Sometimes you have to pick one player and say, do you know what? Fine. If you can't and won't put in what you're required. If you're going to be a bad influence in my dressing room, if you're going to disrupt this football club going forward, I'm not saying that's rash, but it could be anybody. Sometimes you just have to go, here's your cash, off you go. Arsenal gave Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang a whopping great big contract, and then 6 months later gave it to him in a wheelbarrow and said, off you go, because he didn't want him around anymore. Now, maybe Manchester United, someone needs to be strong enough to just do that. Because if you do it to one or you do it to two, then all of a sudden maybe people would start thinking, all right, okay, fine. Because there's not going to be like a queue of takers at top clubs for these Manchester United players that get released. It's not like Barcelona are going to be knocking on the door, or Real Madrid will be knocking on the door, or PSG or Bayern Munich. You know, with all due respect, if Sofyan Amrabat leaves tomorrow, he's going back to Italy to play for Fiorentina at the very best.
Well, Sofyan Amrabat's been another dreadful piece of recruitment. Actually, watching that the Dortmund game, Sabitzer, he was a player that I liked at United, and they could have paid a relatively modest fee to sign him permanently. Instead, they went for Amrabat. Again, it's just a poor decision, isn't it? Sabitzer is clearly a better player than Amrabat.
You say that. You go back to that time. You go back to the time, right? Okay. And I think I was championing Sabitzer because I think he was a good player. But all the United fans were all interested in this new shiny toy that they'd seen at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Well, if at the time they had gone for Sabitzer over Amrabat, you lot would have been kicking off. You'd been kicking off about it.
That's where you have to be strong, though. You know, you can't be influenced by that type of stuff, and you should never sign a player off the back of a World Cup or European Championships. I give you Karol Poborski.
You take Karol Poborski now. Right. Adrian, it's been delightful to have you. I know you've got a shoot off, so we'll let you do that. Have a good weekend, whatever it is you are doing. I'm guessing you're going to be at Arsenal on Saturday. If you are, I will see you there.
Yeah.
One of a number of live commentaries on TalkSport Thursday. Chelsea versus Tottenham kicks off at 7:30. Martin Keown in the commentary box. Oh, that would be lively. 8 o'clock on Thursday night. Aston Villa against Olympiacos. That'll be good. That's in the Conference League semi-final. Friday night, Luton, Everton, Barnsley, Bolton as well. And then on Saturday, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Ipswich Town against Huddersfield. Last day of the Championship. They just need a point. And they will be up in the Premier League again. Come on, the town. And Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest at 3 o'clock is on TalkSport 2. And on Sunday, Crookie and I are doing the Sunday session from various different places. I'm going to be at Brighton. You're going to... Oh, no. You're not working, are you? You've got a day off because Liverpool's too far for you. Liverpool against Tottenham. We'll send Matt Jones there instead. Sorry. And then Perry Groves is going to Chelsea. Okay, looking forward to that. We'll see you on Sunday night.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.